the Agile brand.
Welcome to Season 6 of the Agile Brand, where we discuss marketing technology and customer experience trends, insights, and ideas with enterprise and technology platform leaders. We focus on the people, processes, data, and platforms that make brands successful, scalable, customer-focused, and sustainable. This is what makes an Agile brand. I'm your host, Greg Kilstrom, advising Fortune 1000 brands on MarTech, marketing operations, and CX, best-selling author and speaker. The Agile Brand Podcast is brought to you by Tech Systems, an industry leader in full-stack technology services, talent services, and real-world application. For more information, go to teksystems.com. Before we get started, I wanted to let you know that my latest book, Priority is Action, 7 Principles for Better Strategies, Decisions, and Outcomes, is now available. In it, I give ideas and insights for leaders and teams that need to make meaningful progress on their priorities. After all, our priorities are what we do, not what we say we'd like to do. You can find Priority is Action on Amazon or learn more on my website, gregkilstrom.com. Now let's get on to the show. Today we're going to talk about effective management of teams, even when that means you need to unmanage them. And we'll talk a lot more about what that means. To help me discuss this topic, I'd like to welcome Jack Skeels, CEO and founder of Agency Agile, and author of the book Unmanaged, Master the Magic of Creating Empowered and Happy Organizations. Jack, welcome to the show.
Greg, nice to be here, and thanks for having me. Looking forward to it for a while here.
Yeah, looking forward to talking about this stuff with you as well. Why don't we get started with you giving a little background on yourself as well as what you're currently doing?
Sure. I'm a little bit aged and started my career back in the 80s as a programmer and very quickly became project manager and program manager, had a consultancy. And through a weird set of events, I ended up at a think tank and studying organizational design and theory and all that kind of thing. And fast forward, and all of a sudden I was in the agency world, and Agile was the thing, 2003, 2004, 2005, yeah. That kind of thing. And I started looking at it, the confluence of complex workplaces, you know, matrixed organizations, multi-manager organizations, and Agile, and it was a huge, huge problem. And so that was the birth of a company that I called Agency Agile, and with the idea of doing Agile differently, more effectively, and the like. And we're actually rebranding soon to be Better Company. But it's been a 14-year run, 220 companies. We're still cranking along and helping these organizations get way more efficient by, as the book suggests, unmanaging or managing less and managing better.
Nice. Great. Well, yeah, let's dive in here. And so, you know, a lot of what we're going to talk about is based around your book, Unmanaged. And so, you know, this concept of unmanaging and, you know, what exactly it means, as well as how to do it effectively or not do it effectively, maybe, I don't, depending on the definition. So let's start with the title of the book, Unmanaging. How did you first become interested in this concept and kind of create it?
Well, it goes way back. And as I mentioned, I was a programmer, you know, what they called them back then, right? A programmer back then. That's a bit of a hot shot in the light. But I hated project managers. Mm-hmm. I mean, I actually hated my managers because I thought they don't understand anything about what I'm doing, which was an exaggeration. But in a sense, most interactions actually slowed me down, right? And but strangely enough, I became a project manager because it paid more. And I took on this attitude, which was I wanted to be the project manager that I wish I'd had. Mm. And it ended up being this sort of lazy project manager. And in that way, I ended up picking up some sort of agile techniques very early on in the 1980s. But basically, it was, what do people need? Do they need anything? If not, I'm going to shut up and stay out of the way, right? My teams loved me for this sort of, I called the lazy manager. In fact, I have an article in entrepreneur.com on it, why the lazy manager wins or something like that. And I've always been fascinated by managing. The own effect to me, which was I didn't have to worry about stuff as much because the team was worrying about it. And so that was just sort of the origin. And then it took a while to percolate, but here it is finally out.
Yeah. Well, and so that idea, you know, it's not lazy management, at least my understanding of it. You know, it's not necessarily that managers aren't doing anything, but it's also about managers enabling their teams to maximize productivity instead of micromanaging and doing all of those things that I've known my share of project managers as well. You know, there's good ones and bad ones, but yeah, definitely the micromanagement or the overmanaging, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, can you provide some examples maybe of, you know, what does this look like when it's done well?
Yeah, I have a lot of sort of anecdotes and short stories in the book and the like. You know, one that comes to mind is an owner of a small, you know, 20-person shop, and he was trying to schedule everyone all the time. He spent all day Sunday scheduling them, right? Who's going to work on what this week? And everybody hated the schedules. You know, all the team members hated the schedules because they just weren't right and all that kind of thing. I was on plane and he's sitting next to me and he saw my computer and that I had, you know, a logo that said Agile. He said, "Hey, can Agile help?" And I was like, "Well, okay, fine. We'll call it that." But what I told him is I said, "Why don't you let them figure it out?" We went through this and basically it was, you should take this authoritative role, which is, here's what needs to happen this week, but I'm not going to control or micromanage how you guys get it done. I'll leave that to you. And you know, 4 weeks later, I get this email, "Agile works" is the subject line, all caps, exclamation point. And what he had done, he reclaimed his Sunday by actually not doing as much work, right? By actually maybe assuming people can figure stuff out on their own. And I think that that's the tendency, is that when one views oneself as a manager, the word, by the way, comes from manage, was used before the industrial era to mean tending a flock of animals, right? And so there's the superior thing to it. And I think if you diminish the superior thing, all of a sudden you start saying, well, it doesn't have to be me figuring this out. And in fact, teams mostly like figuring it out on their own.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, so I would imagine there are cases where, you know, teams need some guidance and they need some support. So, you know, unmanaging, I would imagine, doesn't mean no oversight and no guidance or whatever, but, you know, it's about the balance. And it's, I think one of the things, I don't want to get too much into agile semantics here for the, for the audience's sake, but sure. You know, what I think what you're talking about is really embracing agile principles, not necessarily Scrum safe, Scrum, yeah, you know, exactly. whatever like flavor someone wants to kind of translate those principles into. So like, but at their purest essence, let's say the agile principles of, yeah, teams should figure out how they get work done as long as someone gives them the guidance of what goals to achieve. But like, how does a manager kind of know that balance of like, okay, I better step in here, or maybe this team can figure it out themselves? Like how would you coach someone to understand that balance?
Yeah, no, it's a spot on question. You know, the we have it in the book, it's called the ACE model. And I wanted to, there are two problems, really. One problem is managers make 1,000 decisions every day, and most of them involve doing something. And the answer is you probably don't need to do all those things that you might do. But the second one is, how do I grade and filter those things? In other words, is this in general something I should be doing? So we call it the ACE model, and it's authority, control, and empowerment, ACE. And in general, the managerial functions you should be doing, and this is from Agile principles, right, is authority, which is the truth. In other words, here's what we need to get done this week, okay? That's the truth, right? It's not how you should do it or when you should do it or anything like that. And control is, in fact, that how we're going to do it and when we're going to do it and the like. And so in that way, the frame of what you guys need to accomplish, that's a managerial function, absolutely. Yeah. The control function of how and when we do it and all that kind of thing, that's a team function. And then the empowerment function is the sort of the second half of the manager's sentence, which would be, we need all this stuff done by Friday. When you have a chance to look through it, or if you have any questions, let me know. Tell me what you need from me to enable that to happen. So I'm going to be the empowering manager as well, but I'm going to just relinquish that sort of middle ground of, you know, you have to do this and here's how you do it and when you do it. That's sort of the traditional micromanager.
Yeah. Yeah. And so another thing you discuss in the book is the importance of aligning managerial workflows with the needs of the workers and the teams. And, you know, can you talk a little bit about that, and, you know, how might this be done effectively?
Yeah. And I think that there are a couple of things. One is, if you're and most people today are in what I call a multi-manager environment, and it started back in the 70s and 80s with matrix organizations, for anyone who's old enough to remember that, but they seem to have never gone away. And in fact, you know, a lot of the organizations we work with, whether it's, you know, essentially large corporations that have a development or marketing department, or in a shop, you know, 30 to 200 person shop, you end up with this wide range of managers, like requirements managers and client managers or stakeholder managers and project managers and department managers. And sort of the over-managing problem is partly just a level of chaos that comes from all these managers being able to interrupt people.
Right.
And so part of this is, one, we'd like to minimize unnecessary managerial activity, and that'd be great, but we'd also like to channel it. And again, back to an agile principle, we've modified the stand-up. We have a very cool version of the stand-up meeting, which is designed to actually channel all managerial conversation into it, which is part of the idea in the classic agile form, but we sort of put it on steroids, because it's very hard to create quiet during the day, quiet when people can get work done, but it's a lot easier to create noisy. And so we sort of turn it upside down and say, fine, let's make the noisy time really effective, with the idea that maybe there won't be so much noise during the rest of the day.
If you're like me, it's hard to keep up with all the trends, fads, and critical concepts that marketing and CX leaders need to know about. To help, I've partnered with some of the world's most notable MarTech thought leaders to create the Agile Brand Guides book series. These are short reads, 3 hours or less, on important topics like generative AI, customer data platforms, MarTech infrastructure evaluation, and more. They're available in print, digital, and audio formats, and quickly get you up to speed on critical topics that leaders and aspiring leaders need to understand. Search for Agile Brand Guides on Amazon, or go to the Agile Brand Guide website at www.agilebrandguide.com. That's agilebrandguide.com for more. Before we get back to the show, I just wanted to remind you to hit the follow or subscribe button on your app to make sure you get notified when new episodes of this show are available. Now let's get back to the show. So let's talk about maybe that rest of the day, then, the efficiency and, you know, operating effectively and everything. So, you know, another thing you talk about in the book, emphasize the importance of reducing managerial overhead and unnecessary meetings and bureaucracy, kind of to your last point. Can you provide maybe some tips for those listening out there that want to streamline organizations, make them more efficient? I'm sure many people out there many of the consulting clients I work with they're so booked in meetings that getting time on their calendar is like looking 3-4 weeks out. So, you know, there's lots of people like that out here. You know, what would your advice be?
Well, you know, that's a great question. I think I'm going to take on meetings first. And I think people try to make meetings more efficient, not realizing that the side effect may be more efficient meetings means there's more time for meetings, right?
Yeah, right.
And the real thing is, the way to think about meetings is, meetings are a symptom, not a problem, or, you know, they're not a driver. In other words, they calling a meeting is a very natural human thing. Let's get us all together to figure this out. And the question is, why do you need to do that? What failed in the rest of the process? And a lot of times that's the poor briefings or inadequate scoping or lack of alignment and stakeholders and managers. And when you fix those things, then the meetings just start dissolving and the like. And so, you know, that's one of the big things, is that whole ethos of, do we need to have managerial things like meetings happening? And essentially organizations get biased and think, if it's managerial, it must be positive, right? Okay, we're managing it, right? And in fact, every managerial interaction costs productivity. And so this is sort of this ethos, and back to your point, is streamlining the organization to make it more efficient is really just thinking changing the way you think about the organization, that the most important thing to happen is not a manager making a decision or doing something, but actually people being in productive mode. Yeah. And I'll give you a quick little example from the old industrial era. You know, you've got an assembly line, you've got a manager of the assembly line, they make 200 widgets a week. And the manager's like watching them go, that's great, we're making 200. Then the manager says, well, what am I supposed to do? I need to be a manager. I'm going to call a meeting. So they call a two-hour meeting, and lo and behold, only 180 widgets get made that week. And that manager's manager says, what in the hell's going on here? Okay, you only made 180. And the manager says, well, I want to call a meeting. And he goes, don't call meetings. Let them get the work done, right? It used to be so obvious when it was a very simple setting, but in the multi-manager setting, anyone can call a meeting. Yeah. And essentially, you can't trace it back. And then people blame team members for not working hard enough.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that's, it's such a powerful concept to think of meetings as a symptom of something wrong. It's not that every single meeting is that necessarily, but I think just having that mindset really I mean, you know, having been on Scrum teams and traditional project teams and everything like that as well, it's like you can definitely tell when a team is in sync. There are less meetings, and when there is a meeting, everyone takes it seriously. They show up and then they go their separate ways quickly and directly. But yeah, I think that that concept alone is a pretty powerful thing to kind of wrap your head around.
Cool.
As far as professional development and, you know, growth of employees, what are your thoughts here? I mean, you know, given the title unmanaging, you know, as you've reinforced, it doesn't mean you're not managing at all, but, you know, what does that manager look at as far as, you know, professional development and growth?
Well, I think one of the things I go into the book, I've got a couple parts where we talk about it. One is the part of the problem in the first place is this thing called the meritocracy, right? Where only the best in the department gets promoted. And that's, people don't stop to think about it usually because it's actually not what you want as the, say, the owner of that organization, whatever that owner means. What I really want is I want everyone crossing the finish line to the next level as soon as possible. And it's this use of managerial structure or hierarchy as a way of measuring progress and the like, that's a huge problem. And in section 5 of the book, I go into this whole idea that we need to rethink how we talk about growth, career growth, and measurement. And even I even go so far as to say we should turn the pyramid, if you will, upside down and think of it as getting progressing in your career means that you're moving sort of down the pyramid, as in you're supporting more of the pyramid above you. So I was a junior level, I moved to mid level. Now my job is to help all the juniors get to mid, right? And again, progression, and you can go titleless. I think this is something people need to realize. We've got a great client in Australia that we helped do this. He'd been struggling with this because everyone wanted to be, you know, like director of programming and stuff like that. And he said, look, we're not going to have any titles. And everyone screamed, right? Because then what happens when I leave? He goes, when you leave, you can put whatever you want as your title. What do I care, right? Because it's a great idea. Because if, you know, if they're lying, then they'll pay for it eventually, and so But they have a very happy organization because now it's just how do we get great work done, and I'm safe if I need to ever go outside this organization as well.
Yeah, that's great. So one other thing your book touches on is diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI initiatives, and how they can be integrated into this unmanaged approach. Can you expand on this a little bit and maybe provide some insights on, you know, implementing DEI initiatives in organizations?
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought this up, and this is a au courant sort of a topic these days. I felt when it all sort of burst upon us, whatever that was, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, I thought, well, yeah, but we've been doing that all along, and I don't mean that. So these are three very different things, by the way. Diversity is like the selection of people in your workforce, right? And that's a hiring decision, right? And hiring and firing decision, right? That affects your population of people. And equity is about the reward system that you do and the like. So it's, you know, you need to be conscious of those things, right? The problem happens when we get to the E in this, and that is our bias, our natural human biases are so pervasive. And, you know, the great research by Deloitte and a university where they discovered that the single greatest factor in manager to worker personnel review, you know, annual reviews was how many values the manager shared with the worker. In other words, they like them, they think about the same things, whatever, listen to the same music. That was the single greatest factor in the nature of the review. And the quality of the work was actually the third factor. Okay. Wow. And so it was like less than 20-25% or something like that. But that's all natural. I don't think any of those managers were trying to do that.
Right.
But we are so biased. And so in making those equity decisions, people need to get a chance to play so you can actually see how well they do. And then you've got to rate that and everything like that. But getting a chance to play is the I, inclusion. And I spend a lot of time in that relatively in that section, just pointing out it's about not picking who gets to do things, but giving everyone a chance to great. You know, it's just like, it's sort of like T-ball or something like that. Everyone gets to come up to the plate and swing at the ball all the time. That doesn't change, right? And that's the idea of the superior manager chooser is a massive lie, and people need to be very careful around it.
Yeah, that's the great thoughts there. Really, that's really interesting. Well, Jack, lots more we could talk about it, but it's been great talking with you here. Thanks for joining the show. One last question before we wrap, though. You've given a lot of great advice and insights, and certainly recommend everybody picks up a copy of the book as well. But, you know, what's advice you would have for leaders out there listening that, you know, they want to transition to a more unmanaged approach to management? You know, what would you recommend as some first steps there?
Well, you know, there are a lot. I've got a lot of steps in the book. I think ultimately, though, it's hard to do as a inside change agent and without experience. And so I know this is sort of a shameless pitch, but we love working with organizations. We have a great track record, and you know, would love to work with a leader or an organization that feels like they'd like to actually get the benefits of doing this kind of thing. It does. We've been told by a lot of folks, it's a strange thing. It's sort of like scrum coaches as well, right? There's something about a neutral third party that helps change happen better than trying to do it amongst the internal politics and personalities and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's the value of consultants in general, I think, is definitely that objective view, right? So absolutely. Well, I'd like to thank Jack Skeel, CEO and founder of Agency Agile and author of the book Unmanaged, for joining the show. You can learn more about Jack, his book, and Agency Agile by following the links in the show notes. Thanks again for listening to The Agile Brand, brought to you by Tech Systems. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to subscribe and leave us a rating so that others can find the show more easily. You can access more episodes of the show at www.gregkihlstrom.com. That's GREGKIHLSTROM.com. While you're there, check out my series of best-selling Agile Brand Guides, covering a wide variety of marketing technology topics, or you can search for Greg Kihlstrom on Amazon. The Agile Brand is produced by Missing Link, a Latina-owned, strategy-driven, creatively-fueled production co-op. From ideation to creation, they craft human connections through intelligent, engaging, and informative content. Until next time, stay agile. The Agile Brand.